Welcome back to the Gather Dispatch for another month, Gather Autumn Edition. We are layered up. We are feeling good. We got blazers on top of blazers. And joining me in the studio today, I got a first timer and a return guest. And you know I love both camps. To my left, a director at Gather, Kathleen McGivney.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Of course.
And then to her left, which makes it my right, return guest, community manager, Rudy Blanco.
What is up, community? How are you all doing?
We are great now that you are here. So we have got a jam-packed show for all of y'all this month in two parts. The first part, we are going to be talking about how the nonprofit sector interacts with Gather, how we interact with it, and the ways in which learnings from the nonprofit space help us with our corporate work, and vice versa. And then in the second half, we are going to be doing a case study of some of the nonprofit work that Gather does. We will be joined there by our friends at the Chill Foundation, so stay tuned for that. But to start off, I was really interested in having this conversation with both of you because I know you both do a lot of work on your own in the nonprofit space, as well as help Gather figure out how to interact with that space more. And when we talked maybe 2 months ago with Michael and Deborah from NYFA and the Actors Studio, respectively, there were a lot of great questions from the community about nonprofit organizations, how we can get more involved, how we can interact. And I thought it would be nice to give some detail on how some of our gatherers are already interacting with that space, how we like to think about it. And it turns out there are a lot of folks spending a lot of time in leadership positions there. Kathleen, let's start with you. Beyond director at Gather, you have a portfolio of other titles, closet of other hats that you wear. Can you give me the outlines of what else is on your plate these days?
Sure. So outside of Gather, I run the world's largest watch collector community, which is not in the nonprofit space, admittedly, but it is a community of people who are watch collectors. They have some disposable income, so we encourage every one of our members to give back to the communities in which they live.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we do events, when we do collaboration timepieces, we always have a charitable component involved in all of those activities.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason for that is because my co-founder and I are very active ourselves in our own personal lives with nonprofits. We both volunteer for various and sundry nonprofits, and I also serve as the chair of the board of directors of Bailey House here in New York.
First, it's okay to plug things. We'll let you, even if it's for profit, we'll let you say the name of the watch collector.
Thank you. It's called Red Bar Group.
All right. Hopefully we censored that so that no one makes money. Now tell us a little bit more about Bailey House.
So Bailey House has been around for quite a long time and actually was started in 1983 as a response to the AIDS crisis. It was the very beginning of the AIDS crisis and people were losing their housing because landlords were getting afraid for no reason. Like, they couldn't catch AIDS from somebody that lived downstairs, but they were kicking people out of their houses,
right,
and it was causing this big crisis. So Bailey House came out of that to provide housing for people that were ill. And then since 1983 has expanded its mission to provide housing, health care, other supportive services like mental health, all kinds of services to people, both people living with HIV and AIDS and then people with other chronic illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the AIDS crisis, it was pretty close to certain death.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can count AIDS on as a chronic illness because there's so many medications, and if people are treated early, they can live long and full lives. But that requires a lot of supportive services.
Sure.
You know, there's all kinds of things that comes with that. And from that starting point, Bailey House was able to expand and provide services to people that, you know, need access to housing, need access to substance abuse treatment,
mm-hmm,
all kinds of other things in New York.
Thank you for explaining that. There will be links in the show notes for that organization and some of the others we talk about today. So this will be the first time the show notes are actually useful, I promise you. Rudy, now over to you, another person of many hats. What else do you have going on these days?
Before I started consulting and contracting, I was a full-time program director at the Dream Yard Project, which is a nonprofit based out of the Bronx, New York. Been around for like about 25 years. their focus is around social justice, racial equity through the arts. Mm-hmm. How do we find career pathways for creatives and folks that don't necessarily fit within more traditional standard career pathways and industries? And a lot of my time is dedicated to that. So over the last 15 years has been just a lot of work around finding pathways for creatives in underserved communities and helping them get into the institutions that can help them turn that into a career or a venture or a business, exploring creative career pathways overall. Mm-hmm. And when I joined Gather, beginning to figure out what it looks like to be on this side of the nonprofit corporate relationship
yeah.
has been so cool and so interesting, which I'm excited to, you know, share a little bit more yeah. when we talk about Chill. But that's where, you know, most of my work is, working in social justice, racial equity, and the arts.
Fantastic. So it's obvious already where the corporate space and the organizational space is overlapping. Let's talk a bit about how both of those worlds interact with your time spent as consultants. Because as somebody who's working with nonprofits, a good amount of your time is spent giving expertise that you are gleaning from the other things you are doing to the boards of these nonprofits as they're trying to figure out how to fundraise, how best to connect and grow their communities. Kathleen, when you think about how your consulting has shaped the ways in which you are able to help the Bailey House and ways you're able to help people in the Watch Collective figure out what to do with their disposable income, what comes to mind for you first?
The thing that really has helped me, especially as I became more and more involved with Bailey House, you know, I started just as a donor mm-hmm. and an attendee at their fundraising events, which are, by the way, the most fun fundraising events in New York.
Plugs are allowed.
They're really good events. But, you know, I started just as a donor and came more and more involved. And part of that was being able to give my sort of expertise in how do we access corporate donations, right? Because there are a lot of corporations have fundraising arms, some of whom are clients of Gather, actually. And being able to kind of leverage those connections to help to get some additional money into fundraising was the first way to connect with Bailey House mm-hmm. was being able to say, okay, well, there's a member of our Watch community that is a vice president at some financial institution. Let's see if we can get that financial institution to sponsor, you know, our annual fundraising gala, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So it was really about connecting people. And then, you know, other areas of expertise kind of came into play. So way back in the long, long ago, I was an accountant. And so that comes in very handy as the chair of the board of directors when I have to review a Form 990 and sign it for the IRS.
Okay.
So things like yeah. that, like there's other little things in my corporate background that also help with.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of what I like about nonprofit work is that you are often encouraged to bring the totality of your skill set to the equation, because if you don't, there might not be anyone else who can. And the other thing that I think, until I had spent more time in the space, I did not realize is what percentage of the work for the board usually is about making available somebody's connections, how much it really is helping organizations plug into a broader landscape of things.
Yep. That is actually a lot of what the boards of the various nonprofits I work with do. For Bailey House, we have a board member who is part of a law firm. That law firm does pro bono work to review when we need to look at our bylaws and things like that. It's connections, or the person is employed by a company that can provide certain services for the nonprofit. There's a lot of intersection and overlap with that. And the thing that I love about that is this is a way for people who have very demanding careers. Mm-hmm. That board member, she is a partner at a major law firm. She does not have a lot of free time. I think that that's really a way that a lot of people that are in traditional careers, consultants or whatever they're doing as their day job,
yeah.
can get more involved with nonprofits. Whether if they don't have time to volunteer, they can take the expertise that they have and lend that.
Sure. I see you nodding over there, Rudy.
I'm nodding because it just makes me think at the core of the work, right? Having been on the side where I'm a full-time employee of an actual nonprofit, and at the director level where we work with the development departments who are responsible for fundraising and bringing in funds for the nonprofit, and then seeing the needs that exists within the nonprofit beyond the impact, right? Because as we know, nonprofits are about a return on investment that is more impact-driven, right? Like their impact is not revenue, but, you know, how much change are you putting out into the world? And I think that when I started working at Gather as a contractor, right, and my first experience here at Gather was through the whole Chill Days. I mean, I met Kathleen. We met first, and I already knew off the bat, you know, the moment you started talking about your work with Bailey House, I was like, okay, like, clearly there are other gatherers here who are super into the work and the change and what I call mission work, right? Like, and that's really what it boils down to for me. But all that to say that when I came to Gather, I started realizing that being on the side of a company that is interested in figuring out how to engage with nonprofits, and then at the same time working with a nonprofit and trying to figure out how we want to engage, what keeps coming up is contribution, right? Like, how does one contribute, right? And when we were building out a new space that DreamYard is recently opening up, the concept of time, treasure, and talent, you know, like when it comes on the corporate side, it's like, what are your time, treasure, and talent? A lot of times, a lot of big companies will sit down and be like, hey, we want to donate this much, without really understanding that coming in and donating and earmarking it is, it's a nice gesture, right? It's a nice action, and the money can be put to use, but there's no real understanding around whether or not the money that was earmarked is an actual immediate need for these nonprofits, right? So let's say X company comes in, Jason, we're going to give your nonprofit $500K to do this particular work. But then when you go down and you go to your team and your nonprofit and everybody's like, but what we really need is money for supplies right now. But the donors are coming in and donating it in an area that is of value and use to them. That sucks, right? And the reason I bring that up is because as we start exploring what it looks like for I guess, companies like Gather to be involved with nonprofits, and we ask these folks, like, we really want to get to the nitty-gritty of what are the actual needs of these nonprofits. And the experience that I've had kind of doing the work full-time and now being a consultant kind of puts me in a place, it's like, damn, like, it's good for Gather to know what nonprofits are talking about in their leadership teams before we go out and say, hey, let's just throw all this money out and hope that it makes change.
I agree with that. And I think it's really interesting sitting on the board side of it, which as a board, we have a fiduciary duty to the nonprofit. So we review all of the financial statements and all of that. We're, I think, fortunate in that most of our big donors don't try to earmark, which I think is great. If there's anything that anyone can take away from this, making a donation to a charity, just be like, whatever you need it for. Don't try to, unless they're doing a specific fundraising effort around a specific thing. But for the most part, just putting money into the general operating fund and letting the nonprofit figure out exactly where that money will have the best impact is the best way to go. Most of the people who do these kinds of donations and want to earmark it are very well-intentioned. They're like, I am passionate about this specific topic that your nonprofit covers, but the better way to do that to impact the communities that are being served by these nonprofits is to let the nonprofit figure out what the greatest need is at that moment.
And one of the things that excites me most about doing this work right now with Gather as we figure out how we want to engage is it's like matchmaking, right? Like, what is the balance between what the nonprofit needs, wants, and can do, and what the company that wants to donate, what the donors want to do, and what they have availability for?
I think one of the other things about nonprofit work, and one of the things that maybe people see as a barrier to entry in any kind of nonprofit involvement, is you don't have to contribute money. You really don't. If you are a software company, hi, all software companies who are listening to this, if you are a software company that makes amazing project management software, or you make financial management software, or whatever it is, and you can contribute that as well as training, an in-kind donation is sometimes, you know, more impactful and valuable to a nonprofit than, you know, an actual cash donation, depending on what it is. I mean, please also give cash.
No, absolutely give cash.
Please,
definitely give
I will,
cash.
Yes, please.
But don't earmark it.
But don't earmark it.
Definitely don't.
But don't be a coward.
But I think, you know, the thing is that people can contribute time. If they have volunteer time and a nonprofit you want to get involved with needs that kind of volunteer work, great. If you don't have a lot of time but you have talent, that's also valuable to a nonprofit. Like, serving on the board of a nonprofit, it actually doesn't take up a huge amount of time. It's, you know, a couple of meetings and you have to review some documents and stuff like that. But there's other ways you can contribute your expertise to a nonprofit if it were something like having a project manager literally just go in and do a seminar, great, they'll take that too. And I think that's another way that you can get involved and feel like you're giving back to your community, you know, without necessarily breaking the bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all the things that private companies, let's say, hire companies like Gather for, nonprofits have those functions too. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times people forget, like, a simple, easy, low-lying fruit is if you're a graphic designer, right? One of the biggest ways in which any nonprofit shares their mission and registers and does outreach and gets donors, right, is having some really dope graphic designers in cases where you have that privilege. Because to be honest, in order to run a nonprofit, graphic design is on the lowest of the lowest roles on the totem pole that are going to get hired, right? And I don't know if it's been the same case with you, Kathleen, but one of the biggest budget lines in any nonprofit are the people. Because a lot of nonprofits, the people are the ones that do the work. So when companies come in and earmark these funds and then tell you, I think that's one of the most pretentious things, right? One, I think it's weird for you to earmark, no tea, no shade, but a little bit of shade, right? Because it's, I'm being honest and I'm being truthful for the sake of, you know, the mission and the work, right? Is to come in and say, I'm going to earmark these funds, but it can't be used for staff. Ugh. You know how often that happens? And then the companies are here feeling so good about themselves. Like, I just contributed all of this, but I told them they can't spend it on the one thing that they need. And not all nonprofits are like this, right? Because nonprofits determine who they want to work with, but...
Well, I can say, like, the personnel, like you said, it is truly the largest line item. And if you go and make a donation and say it can't be used for personnel, like, those are the people that are getting the work done. If you, I don't know if you guys are familiar. There are a number of sites out there that, like, kind of rate charities, or, like, there's Charity Navigator and a few of other ones. If you're a nonprofit in the United States, your financial statements, your tax returns are public. A lot of those will say, okay, this is how much money this nonprofit spends on stuff. Some people will be like, well, they don't, you know, they spend more money on, let's say, building maintenance, right, than they spend on whatever people consider program work. Mm. People operate those programs, is my point. So, like, you can't separate operation costs from the work. Like, it's because you can't, like, this stuff isn't getting.
That is what an organization
is.
That's the work. It's that you can't, it's like not magically, you know what? The plumbing doesn't maintain itself,
right,
even though it falls under, you know, salaries or personnel or operations or whatever. That's how the work gets done.
Let me take this in a little bit of a different direction. We brought up some examples of where it seems like our consulting background, where it seems like the experience that our listener base would have with corporate entities can bring some talent out of our talent treasure and time that might be beneficial to organizations. Familiarity with agile concepts and other sort of organizational tools, the practitioner level tools of being a good designer, et cetera, et cetera. Let's think in the other direction. How do you think that your time spent with organizations has helped inform the way that you work with your consulting partners when you are doing your corporate consulting work?
Well, for me, it's a number of things, right? I've seen how nonprofit organizations operate. So I have, like, a little bit of that how the sausage is made kind of stuff in the back of my mind at all times. So when I'm in a corporate environment and there's some frustrating process or procedure going on, I, you know, like, I feel like I have better visibility into all of the behind the scenes things that go into making a company work. I think also it has informed my sense of empathy quite a lot. It helps me to be a more empathetic human in general. Mm-hmm. And it really helps me in a corporate space where sometimes, you know, you'll be toiling along in your corporate job and, like, the email won't send, or, like, some technical thing goes wrong, or someone gets really upset because they like their social media engagement rate is low or whatever. And it helps me to just be able to, like, kind of temper that and have empathy for the person having that emotion, but, like, refocusing them on something that's more important. Mm-hmm. It really has, I think, helped me just as a human being to be able to interact with people in a professional environment, especially too, again, and I think probably this applies to you, Rudy, as well. If you're working in a nonprofit area or you're involved with that, you'd interact with a lot more people from different walks of life than you necessarily would you know, on a day-to-day basis in your regular peer group or in your office. Mm-hmm. And so I think that also has, it's given me a lot of exposure to people from kind of, that I probably never would have met otherwise. And therefore, again, has kind of improved my ability to be a friendly person, to like want to learn more about the individuals that I'm interacting with. And like, it's just helped me be like a better human.
Hmm. Awesome. Well, I know, Kathleen, you have to get back to the good work of consulting, so we will let you get back to that. But we have, after the break here, we're going to dig into a Gather case study with one of the organizations that we have been partnering with for a number of years, the Chill Foundation. We'll tell you all about it when we come back. Rudy's going to hang around because Rudy's been a big part of that work, and we're going to look into some of the changes in the ways we are operating with them these days and what we have learned and how we have tried to learn how to be better partners to them over the years. Very excited about that. Kathleen, thank you so much for your time. There will be links in the show notes for where to go. Spend your time, treasure, and talents, everyone. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Stick around after the break, y'all. Welcome back to the Gathered Dispatch. We have Rudy still here with us. Thank you for sticking around for the B segment. I appreciate it.
Always.
And we are joined now in the room. First time in about a year, I would say, we got you in the hot seat. Gather's founder, Justin Tobin.
Yep, brushing off the dust. I'm right here with you.
It's kind of like riding a bike, but the bike is a microphone. Does that help?
I'm not going to go anywhere with that.
Deal. Okay. And joining us across the phone line here from a place with snowboards in the background of the shot, so you really know they mean business, are Nikki Tardif, the Senior Director of Development at Chill, and Ben Clark, CEO of Chill. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, excited to be here with you all.
Our pleasure. So we have had a relationship, Gather and Chill, for, I don't know, you all tell me. It's been a number of years. What's the number?
I would say it is 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah. It actually even predates Chill's awareness of our relationship with them.
That sounds creepy. Tell me more.
So full disclosure, I am a snowboarder. I grew up skiing because snowboarding, I'm so old that snowboarding didn't exist when I was growing up. But in my early 20s, made the switch over to the dark side, as they say, and have never looked back. And I'm a very passionate snowboarder because it has meant a lot to me in my life for a lot of different reasons that we don't have time to go into. And I have a wife and two children who are also snowboarders. And as much as it has meant to me in my life, through the community of snowboarding, I came to learn about Chill by knowing a number of people at the Burton organization over the years. For those that are not aware, Chill is actually, I don't want to say an arm of Burton. How would you describe it?
We actually were. We were started as the Burton Foundation many, many years ago, and later became an independent nonprofit. And now the majority of the resources it takes to do our programming comes from outside of Burton and the Carpenter family. But we were at one point Burton's philanthropic entity.
Yeah. That lined up with the fact that here at Gather, we have a lot of skiers and riders that are also passionate about sliding, as I like to say. The idea came to me that as much as snowboarding means to me, it means a lot more to the people that benefit from the programs that, that Chill puts out there. If there was any way that I and Gather could help in any way that I wanted to do that. Our relationship with Chill really just started with us organizing a one-day trip up to Hunter Mountain. The day would be paid for by Gather, and whoever wanted to come was welcome to come, but they just had to make a contribution to Chill. Mm-hmm. And that's how it all started, the better part of 10 years ago,
wow,
and has evolved and grown since then.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into the details of that evolution because I think that's obviously a valuable aspiration to have long-term relationships with the organizations you care about. But I do want to learn more about the organization. So what falls under the purview of Chill's remit right now?
I'll take a first stab at that. Nikki and I will probably both jump in with some different pieces, but at a very high level, Chill is a nonprofit organization with a mission to inspire young people through board sports and build a more equitable outdoor community. And it's very important, actually, at some point later today, maybe we'll have time to unpack each of those two pieces of our mission. But historically, we've been a nonprofit mostly focused on the individual level impact that we have with each young person that we work with in our programming. And we understand that we also have to be working at a systems level as an organization, in addition to an individual level, if we are hoping that systems will change. And they must. Our mission has these two equally important components, the second of which, the systems piece, is newer to us and an area of growth and innovation and exciting opportunity for the future. The organization was started almost 30 years ago by a couple who happened to also have started and own Burton Snowboards. No big coincidence there, but that's Jake Burton Carpenter and Donna Carpenter. And the original impetus was to invite more young people in the Burlington, Vermont community who wouldn't otherwise be able to access snowboarding into the snowboarding community and allow them to learn how to snowboard. And fast forward almost 30 years, the organization is quite a bit bigger, as Nikki will share, and goes well beyond snowboarding to skateboarding, surfing, paddleboarding, and increasingly into career pathways in the outdoors. So it's a full-fledged youth development organization now operating at scale. Nikki, tell us a little bit more about the programming itself and the scale.
Sure. So as Ben mentioned, there's four board sports that kind of make up the core of Chill's programming: snowboarding, skateboarding, surfing, and stand-up paddleboarding. And within each one of these programs, not only do we incorporate lessons on how to ride, but then we also have a core value-driven curriculum: respect, courage, patience, responsibility, persistence, and pride. Since Chill started in 1995, we've had over 30,000 young people go through our program. Annually, we're looking about 2,400 youth in North America at 13 different sites. We also have programs globally in Europe, Japan, Australia. But yeah, 13 sites within the U.S.
I just want to add quickly in terms of where we're headed. It's interesting you used the word evolution earlier. That term became part of what we built into our three-year strategic plan recently. We're calling an area of work Chill Evolution, where we're building on that individual level core programming and providing opportunities for older participants and especially alumni to discover career pathways and build real inroads into careers in the outdoors. Working with companies, especially in the outdoor sector, but beyond that as well, we're going to be able to build a sort of ecosystem of opportunities that doesn't exist currently and should and must, again, if the sector is going to make progress in the way that I think most participants in outdoors want to.
So I'm particularly interested in these moments where the mission starts to evolve from something that's focused on individuals and impact on individuals and starts to take on the structure of systems. What does that moment feel like when you start to see the edges of something larger and more connected that you can still be a part of in your same mission?
It's a great question. I might zoom out and say that I think in addition to reflecting on Chill's experience as an organization, this is a societal period we're going through. A lot of people in society until recent years either overlooked or willfully ignored the extent to which oppression happens both at an individual and a systems level. Whether we're talking about systemic racism or systemic sexism, those systems that perpetuate oppression can't be ignored at one level and addressed only at another level. We've spent a little bit more time as a society working on or thinking of oppression on an individual level and taking individual action. And that's super important. But until we actually study, unpack, and address the systems level at which a lot of these things exist, we just won't make the kind of progress that we all want to have happen. It feels all at once daunting because if this were easy to do, it would have been done hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. And we've worked ourselves into a knot over many hundreds of years, heading in the wrong direction, building systems that are oppressive, in some cases on purpose, rather than unwinding them. And we've got a lot of unwinding to do. So one organization against this big problem can feel a little bit like, well, what can we do? That's the moment where you feel powerless. On the other side, it feels incredibly empowering, incredibly inspiring, I think, to know that A, we're not alone. A lot of companies and a lot of nonprofits want to team up. And they also understand that we're only going to get this done if we do team up. So suddenly you've got a lot of people you're standing next to, a lot of other organizations, and you're going to take on the giant and you're feeling confident because there is a chance to do this. We can make meaningful progress. We just have to allocate resources and decision-making differently than we have.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I would add on that is the systemic piece. I think it's like you get to be a part of real change, but I don't want to move past that individual change that happens. We were just on a conversation with a board member who got to hear the story of a young person whose life was radically transformed by this experience at Chill. And I think our hope is we want more people to experience that. And if it's just Chill running our programs, we'll continue to max out at 2,500 youth a year. But if we can see systemic change, how many more young people will have this opportunity? How many more young people will feel welcome on the mountain or welcome in the outdoors that currently don't feel like they have a place there? So you get to focus on that individual impact and then have a greater impact once it's truly accessible for everybody. Mm. It's an exciting thing to be a part of.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So Rudy, I know that Gather has a 10 plus year relationship here, but you came on in the last couple of years and to Gather in general and to join on with this partnership. And I know your community got involved in this as well. What has it been like at this stage of the relationship, joining up an existing partnership? And what was your experience becoming involved?
It was really cool because when I had first heard about Chill, like I knew nothing of Chill. Clearly it was something that, you know, was popular. People here at Gather loved the experience, which to me kind of lets me know like, hey, that's something that's in the fabric of Gather, right? Like, how do we improve on it? How do we grow on it? So, interesting story. When we were planning last year's Chill Day, right before we jumped into the deep end of it, I had met Ashley from Chill, and I started working with some more of the program folks from Chill as we were coordinating. And all of a sudden, they start telling me, yeah, we have these really cool schools in the Bronx that do, you know, and right away I hear the Bronx and, you know, that's me. And on a completely different base, separate from everything that's already happening with Gather, I get a message. CJ's wife, Christoph, who works here with Gather, also happens to work at the high school that I worked at for, you know, the first time I had started teaching. And unbeknownst to me, Mary and I were already friends. She introduces me to, it was just like serendipity. It was, I can't even begin to explain like how the coincidences just piled on each other. And Mary just hits me up. She goes, oh, Rudy, we're doing this really cool skiing program. It's this org, Chill. I was like, what? Wait, what? Chill? And I go to Justin, I'm like, wait, Chill. Like, should I put, started putting the pieces together and realized that not only were y'all already doing work in an area where I'd been working in for quite some time with some of the schools that DreamYard also works with. Like, it was just a great situation. We started playing around with what Chill Day could have been. It tweaked a little bit from what we had done in the past. And granted, I'm not going to lie, Nikki, it was a lot of work, a lot of things that looking back, right, it was an amazing time. But looking back structurally, strategically, didn't quite align with neither what we had in mind and what Chill wanted to do, right? So yeah. One of the first things we started talking about was, well, how do we make it an experience that both honors the mission, right, the systemic stuff, but also the individual. After a few calls with Justin, Ben, you know, Nikki and I started putting together a package that both supports Chill as an entity that does amazing work, proven, tried, tested. Like, they don't need us to go to them and be like, hey, your work is like, they know they're awesome. The data, the impact shows that they're awesome. We're awesome, right? Two awesome groups coming together to do the work was phenomenal. But I think the piece that was most exciting was us coming to a realization right on the Gather side, like, listen, how do we support programs? You're running your stuff so you know how best to incorporate, right? How can we support, if possible, financially, but also can we provide some sort of mentorship, right? Can we, beyond just snowboarding, can we figure out how do we engage Gather in a way where it's just one day of going up and chilling and skiing and getting individual contributions into something that could be year long, right? And that contributes to the impact at the individual basis, at the program level. So in other words, how does Gather support Chill across an entire program instead of just one event? And we're excited to maybe talk a little bit more about some of the things we're thinking about and how that plays a big part in it, and where it is now.
And if I could just pile on the awesome train, you know, just to zoom out a little bit, I think that what we're trying to do here, whether we realize it or not, is representative of what I think the future of corporate philanthropy is. You know, before I started Gather, I had a number of other corporate jobs, and corporate philanthropy, at least at those very large corporations, at best was us willing to contribute some money into that was going into some random organization that we didn't really know that much about. And really the purpose of it was just to make the employees feel like the company was doing good things for the world. Whereas I think that the employees wanted something more. I think they wanted a connection. And I think that that connection is what we're trying to do here at Gather, where a lot of the ethos that we have and values that we have at Gather line up to a lot of the values and the focus that Chill has, both within Gather as well as Gathers themselves individually in their personal life. We're still trying to figure it out. But I think that what we want as a company, and what I see a lot of other companies wanting, is this idea of experiential philanthropy, where not only is there this alignment of passions, in this case, board sports. I think everyone here doesn't want to just throw money into some pot, right?
Sure.
They want to see and experience where their money is going and feel a part of it.
And I think, Jason, we also spoke about, you know, with Kathleen around the idea of what does it look like? Like I, with a background in nonprofit, it just feels icky being on the nonprofit side. And Nikki, I'm not sure if y'all feel the same, right? And kind of having a donor or a funder who pretends to know more than the nonprofit in what they do, right? It's one of the reasons I'm most excited about developing and growing this partnership with Chill. The fact that we're able to be like, hey, like we know we have this history with Chill. Here's the funds you need, like do what you do best, and how can we support?
And and that's another aspect of the change beyond just moving towards this idea of experience, that the relationship between the donor and the non-for-profit is more of a partnership. And I think there was a shift that took place when we started looking to Ben and Nikki and the entire Chill organization to actually consult us. You tell us what is going to help you, because we came up with these ideas in terms of the Chill Day and everything that we did last year and previous years, just because we were kind of, you know, shooting in the dark and we're coming at it. Now we have a partner that we can talk to about, well, how do we do this better?
Yeah, well, I want to get back to that sort of moment of transition and when we all sort of discovered that we wanted to do more and be more communicative. But first, I do want to hear some of the ideas, Nikki, if there's some stuff you could share that we've come up with.
Cool.
The ideas we'll start with, and then we'll get to that moment. Because I think it was a really rare and beautiful moment for a company and a nonprofit to come together in that way. But I'm really excited about where we've landed this holistic partnership. So it's not a one and done day experience in the year. It's looking at how do we both continue to support each other, provide information throughout the year so that Gather and the team at Gather can really feel like they're a part of Chill and a part of our mission. So we do want to like culminate with a really awesome experience for Gather folks and Chill folks to come together, because we know that one-to-one time is so powerful. And so what we're looking at doing this March is our snow programs are typically a 6-week program. And really so much of Chill is focused on creating access for young people. Most of the young people that we're working with do not regularly get access to the mountain, which is why Chill is so important for them. And this experience is so important. So we're going to be providing an additional day for them to get out there, the 7th day, which typically doesn't happen, and inviting the folks at Gather to come and be a part of that day. It's a culmination of their 6 weeks. So we get to celebrate what they've accomplished. The team at Gather can really ride alongside them, see that transformation that happened, that courage and confidence that's kind of developed over those 6 weeks, have that time to network, to celebrate, to to share a meal together, and really know that there's folks alongside kind of cheering them on. The heart of Gather and Chill coming together was so important. So we wanted to keep that, but do it in a way that like really fit within our existing program. And then we're looking at what happens for the rest of the year. And so we're talking about regular communications and stories that we can share with the Gather team throughout the year. Like, here's what Chill's doing. Here's an alumni portrait. Here's other stuff that's happening throughout the year. Volunteer opportunities throughout all of the seasons. So for skate and surf and of course snow, how do we get gather folks out there with the youth, really developing that relationship, and then have even more Chill ambassadors inside, which will be really incredible. And then what else can we do in between? Knowing that Gather has an incredible network, how can they help Chill as we look to raise more awareness and more donors throughout the region, create opportunities for Gather to get in front of more Chill folks too?
I'm really excited about all those things, and in particular, potential partnerships even beyond board sports. Professional development, just as an example, we have pretty much every month here at Gather, we have Lunch and Learns. That's really about professional development of gatherers. Maybe that's something that we could begin to invite on occasion Chill participants to. Maybe we could organize a special one for Chill. Or maybe there's internship opportunities, whether it's with us or with actually some of our clients. So I'm interested in exploring all of those things.
Definitely. Yeah, so are we. I think there's so much there. And really, it's interesting to reflect on the way in which we've dramatically changed the way we're working together and can celebrate what it looks like now, but have no idea what it will look like in 5 or 10 years. All we know is that we've created a rare platform for experimenting. There's relational trust that sometimes isn't there in relationships like this. And that gives us an ability to try stuff and be okay learning and growing and getting back up the way that we expect young people to when they take a fall of snowboarding or skateboarding. I think that's one of the big wins, is that we've created that.
You know, from where I'm sitting and from what I understand, this is sort of a moment that takes a lot of bravery from a lot of people to have frank discussion around what long-term partnerships mean and how they can evolve and what people's actual needs are, and inviting people to be vulnerable enough to discuss their actual needs in a partnership. And so I'm very interested in sort of that moment, how we talked our way through it. Yeah, I'd just love to hear anything that you'd be willing to share.
Sure. Yeah, I think all of those are so true. And the other word that I would use is vulnerability and humility. And I think that's really was the basis of this conversation of Chill kind of sharing, this is awesome, and then here's some of the things that are really challenging for us if to continue forward. The humility of Justin and Rudy and like listening and then offering ideas of like, but we don't have to close the door. We want to continue the discussion. And I appreciate that so much. Like Justin, I remember in that meeting, like, well, then what do you want? And that's not what you always hear with a partner. It has been like a dream. Rudy, you have been a dream to work with, and being able to say like, we don't have to have it all figured out. Let's figure it out together. And it took some good ideas and bad ideas, but I think where we landed is something that's honestly creating a pathway for Chill to take to other partners too. It's creating ideas and different ways of working to move away from this maybe like one time or transactional experience and creating experiential, Justin, to your word, opportunities to engage with companies, to engage with employees in a way that works with Chill's programs. So again, keeping those youth first. And I think there's a lot of other ideas that we're excited to like jump into and explore. And so this is just sort of the starting point. And then each year we can look at tweaking or adding or mixing it up a little bit.
I think in addition to humility, it also frankly took a lot of courage on the part of you, Nikki, and you, Ben, to speak up. Because I'll never forget that initial meeting that we had after the Chill Day. Rudy and I were like on cloud nine. We thought the day was like unbelievable. Everybody had a great time, including the, you know, the Chill participants. We got all this great video, blah, 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 blah. And then to hear that actually a lot of it was really challenging and didn't work for the Chill was like, oh, it was like, deflating, but just for a moment. It sort of, maybe deflating is the wrong word. It actually brought Rudy and I just back down to earth, right? Mm. And it took courage on the part of Nikki and Ben to bring us back down to earth. And I think that all too often the relationship between the corporation and the nonprofit, and I've seen it, they're doing this corporate version of mansplaining, you know, to the to not-for-profit, thinking that they know everything. Yeah. And to your point, Nikki, it's like corporations just need to be a lot more humble about, because you guys are the experts, right? And that's going back to like, yeah, we're a creative consulting company, but we also know what we don't know. And looking to Chill to be consultants to us about how best to make an impact is what I think a lot of other companies need to do.
Hmm. And just the impact I feel is just so much larger this way, you know, like with this approach around a year-long conversation, right? A year-long engagement. Partnerships like these provide a third space in a career readiness track that is very rare. It doesn't happen all the time, but I'm glad we're doing it this way because it's the first baby steps into something that truly impacts beyond just the mountain and beyond just this program year.
Yeah. Justin, I'm so glad that you brought us back to that meeting and that moment and the courage it did take both of us, both organizations is what I mean, and all of us as individuals who were kind of in the Zoom room for that meeting. I remember planning for that meeting with Nikki and others and thinking through the struggle that we often have when we're in a meeting like that. As you described, usually the power dynamic between funder and fund receiving organization, regardless if it's a corporate entity or an individual or foundation, is such that we don't tell our whole truth. Mm. And I don't mean we, the adults. What we're not doing is telling the whole truth of young people. Mm. And it's so easy for nonprofits and even schools and school districts to forget to center youth and actually put adults' needs and adults' challenges front and center. We all know not to do it, but we fall over ourselves constantly. It happens in schools every single day of the year, happens in nonprofits too, because it's all adults who operate schools and nonprofits, and it's human nature, right? So we have to just always remind ourselves, center the youth, center the youth, center the youth. So in preparing for this meeting, we were kind of just like, we have to share, honestly, what the needs are of our young people. And we have to listen honestly and eagerly and humbly to the needs of the adults at Gather. And I know, and Nikki knew, that there was going to be some common ground and some overlap and a way to find authentic, honest, you know, win-wins. But without doing that, we couldn't hear your honest truth either, and we wouldn't have been able to have that opportunity. The risk in it for us is that you would have chosen the other path than you did, which is a hard shutdown and a sort of like, I can't believe you're not more grateful for what we've already done. We're out of here. And it was so relieving to see that your instinct, as deflating as it was, because it was deflating for us too. We were on a kind of a high about it also. It was super fun. Everybody loved that day, but we knew that it wasn't going to be a sustainable thing. So your move during the meeting was to just sort of come down to earth and say, tell us more, not just now, but even like, go talk more and come back and tell us every bit of your honest truth of what you need and what your young people need and let us respond to that. And that was so unique, such a breakthrough moment for us. And it's good learning for us too, because it's not something we frankly trust every relationship to be able to withstand. And now we know that when the relationship can withstand that, there's a whole different level that we can achieve.
So this will probably get left on the cutting room floor, I'd imagine.
But thank you for letting me know in advance.
Yeah, we just warning. We have a saying here. It's actually more than a saying at Gather. It's one of our ethoses. Life is too short to work with shitty people.
It is.
Is it going to make the floor?
So I hope Chill continues to have the luxury of being able to do that.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking some time to come have this conversation with us. It's all really, really interesting stuff to me. And the good news is at Gather, you all listeners will have an easy time knowing what to do to support Chill, because we're going to be way more communicative for way longer through the year about what you can do. But for other folks who are listening who aren't in Gather, what can they do to come say hey to Chill and figure out how they can help?
You can find us at chill.org. My information, Ben's information is on there, so take a peek there. We are always looking for, if you happen to be in one of our 13 program locations, come out and volunteer. Come check us out. See what we're about. Meet our local staff. Meet the young people that we get to work alongside with. And then we love your donations. We need financial support to make these programs possible. So chill.org, you can donate today.
And in addition to your own financial resources, if you're able to share some with us, we're really, really eager to meet more individuals, companies, and foundations that would have a natural interest in what we do but haven't met us before. And that's not everyone. We have a unique approach to youth development, and we understand that. But if anyone in your network you think would take a unique interest, either because of their interest in board sports, the outdoors, making the outdoors more equitable, or sport as a learning activity, please introduce us to them, and we'll follow up from there.
And y'all heard Gather. Like, if you at Gather and you trying to mess with Chill and kind of dive a little deeper, like, please hit me up. Let's talk, because once we have our good core of folks who want to volunteer and mentor, I'd love, Nikki, Ben, you know, invite y'all back to kind of speak to that group. And we can just hash out what it means to be a mentor and build some culture and some philosophy around mentorship at this level and at this approach. So I'm around. Hit me up.
Fantastic. Well, Ben, Nikki, thank you again for joining us. Rudy, thanks for hanging around the whole show, wire to wire, unlike Mamie. And Justin, good to see you again. Maybe same time next year?
Absolutely.
All right. It's a date. But you know who's really chill? Our beautiful listeners. I want to thank you again for listening to the Gather Dispatch. And I have one and only one thing to ask of you. If you liked any of this, if you found even portions of it edifying, please think about one other person who might like it and suggest they give a listen. Thank you all. See you next month.
Thank you, John.